नाना शास्त्र विचार नाय कने बना सतर्म संस्थापक लोकानामित कारण त्रिभुवने मान्य शरण्य कर राधा कृष्ण पदारविन्द भजना नन्देन मातालिका वन्दे रूप सनातन रघुजग श्रीजीव गोपालक I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Shishad Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai. Okay, so today we have a few verse sheets to give out. Let's just see here. Okay. What's the idea? Okay, I'll take that, thanks. Accepting only what was necessary, and we saw that Prabhupada was giving a practical example. I can just go there, thanks. Very practical example from life in devotional service. That was about our chanting. We should chant 16 rounds a day, and we should also chant more than 16 rounds a day, but we shouldn't set ourselves some type of goal which we're not going to be able to achieve. So then we had asked you all to write down what you felt were rules which interested you or you wanted to know more about. So, I went through all the different lists that you all made up. And let's see, where is it? Here it is. We found that the one was quite interesting, actually. Only one person was interested in hearing about avoiding offences, and what most of you were interested in was the danger of reading too many books. There was outstanding interest in that subject, actually. Which, anyway, might be saying something. So, therefore, seeing that was the one thing that more of you were interested in than any other thing, I looked up a few references, some nice references actually, and I gave the diskette to Vikram, and Vikram hasn't shown up. So, here we are. Anyway, the next one, anyway, he knows where we are, he knows I need it, and so I guess he'll come. It's just, sorry? Yes, well, we may have to read too many books tomorrow then, I guess. But the next one was the idea of taking risks in devotional service and how that is pleasing to Krishna. So there was quite a bit of interest in that. Let's just have a look. So in chapter 6, where is it? Uh, Which one is it? Sorry? Oh, I see. Okay. One should take all kinds of risks and perform all endeavors for Krishna's benefit. So Prabhupada's presenting it as such. When I looked it up, where is it? Gosh. When I looked it up, oh, here it is. It's on page 99. It's the first one, and actually, what is really being stressed is not so much the taking of risks, but more performing all endeavors, which is mentioned on page 56. Anyway, that's all right. The idea of taking risks and not being apathetic in devotional service, it's a nice idea. Of course, Srila Prabhupada made the point that the experienced devotee, intelligent devotee, knows how to catch the big fish without getting his feet wet. In other words, an intelligent devotee will know what risk to take and what risk not to take. Prabhupada or Srila Rupa Goswami is not trying to encourage us to be foolhardy and just do stupid things. But certainly, if one extends oneself for Krishna's service, then that's very nice. In material life, oftentimes people extend themselves for their own satisfaction. So we should be prepared to extend ourselves for the service of Krishna. As far as taking risk and what sort of context we might apply this idea of taking a risk in, Prabhupada, he talks about taking risk in preaching activity. And of course, Prabhupada gives his own example that he took a great risk coming to the Western world at a very advanced age, 70 years old or so, and to a different culture with nothing, 40 rupees, and not knowing where he was going to go or what opportunities there might be or what dangers there might be. So Prabhupada, he took that risk. So following in Prabhupada's footsteps, we could also apply that idea, that concept of taking a risk to ourselves, in that we might undertake some preaching mission, going to some new place, some unknown place, to establish Krishna consciousness. This would be a nice way to fulfill this particular rule of being ready to take some risk. Because we all, after all, the majority of us here are brahmacharis. You're a vanaprastha, isn't it, Prabhu? Something like that. In that direction. Right, that's nice. So the majority of us are in some position like that. So particularly if you're a brahmachari or vanaprastha, then to really take some useful role in the preaching movement, that is really like the ideal service, or a very good service if one can do it. Of course, if one is a householder, then one can also do the same thing. Srila Prabhupada in 1969, to start the preaching in England, which is a big preaching field. So Prabhupada sent three householder couples, and in a similar way to Srila Prabhupada, they had practically nothing. They didn't really know where they were going or what it was going to be like or where they were going to stay or anything. They just went and depended on Krishna. And they made great progress in preaching. So for anyone actually, and particularly for brahmacharis, vanaprasthas like that, but actually for everyone, this idea of taking risks can very nicely, you can fulfill the purport of that by having the desire, trying to get some opportunity to go to some new area to establish the preaching of Krishna consciousness. Do you think that's a good idea, Arjuna? Where are you going next year? You're going to preach somewhere, right? Oh, not decided. I thought you were going to South Africa. Who?
Ananda.
Oh, where's Ananda? Oh, he's hiding. Scared of the risk. Watch out for the Zulus. Anyway, that's nice. Ah, well done. Thank you. Oh, good. Okay. Great. Yeah. And where? Oh, you're, it's not decided. What are the choices? Gauridas is deciding. Where are you going, Vikram? Next year? We're talking about taking risks here. So where are you going? You don't know? Oh, really? Where are you going? Russia! Wow. Okay, very good. So this is the right spirit. Where are you going, Krishnadas? Anyway, okay. So, the idea is that Krishna appreciates if we make some special effort. After all, we have been here in this material world many lifetimes, serving our own interests. And as we've mentioned, many times we take risks for our own, in the course of trying to fulfill our own desires for sense gratification. Many times we take risks. So of course, as Prabhupada said, the intelligent devotee knows how to catch the big fish, so to speak. Anyway, how to preach, actually, without getting his feet wet. In other words, without becoming influenced by the people that he's preaching to. So, we've been taking so many risks for our sense gratification. So let's take some risk, extend ourselves for Krishna's pleasure. And if we do that, then Krishna will appreciate. If we're the type of devotee who thinks that, you know, I must stay in the mode of goodness. Of course, that's also a point. But, you know, therefore I must not work too hard. I must make sure I get sufficient rest and sufficient prasad. Those are priorities number one and two. In either order. So I must get those things together, and then I'll see what I can do without over-endeavoring. Because as we read yesterday, was it yesterday? Yeah. Some, to the effect of not over-endeavoring. In this way we may become lazy fellows in the name of Krishna consciousness. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati complained, actually, Prabhupada said, that some of his disciples, in the name of not falling into the mode of passion, from the mode of goodness, some of his disciples didn't want to go out and vigorously preach. They would rather sit in the temple and chant their rounds and so on like this, rather than get out and work hard, because they thought they'd fall down from goodness to passion. That Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, when will they come up to passion? From ignorance, in other words. When will they come up to passion? That would be an improvement. So Prabhupada also said that this movement is not a place for lazies or crazies. So certainly we don't want to be crazies, but we also don't want to be lazies. Yeah. Anyway, those are some ideas on the subject. Any further points as far as taking risks is concerned, Keshav?
Most times taking risks to ensure the Krishna does what our desires to do.
Yes, that's there.
That's one of the, it's not
Okay, that's a good point. That there's a certain amount of risk preaching to people who are not interested or like that. And then another one of the rules, which, let's see, not very many of you were really concerned about, but a couple of you were, was this point about not instructing people who are not interested. Actually, Prabhupada explains that particular rule. Let's see, where is it? The second lot of 10. One should not instruct a person who's not desirous of accepting devotional service. So that is explained in chapter 7 under the heading of, where is it? Somewhere here. Is it 7? No, maybe it's... Oh, here it is. It's actually explained under the heading of not accepting unfit disciples. Anyway, that's all right. So, I mean, there's a certain... Prabhupada explains in those terms, so there's a little difference in concept, actually, between the rule as it appears in chapter 6 and how it's explained in chapter 7. But, anyway, putting that aside for the time being, it is a fact that if you preach, like, just over the road here, on this Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg, you go down to the Parikrama path where it crosses the main road, and there's a fairly large vacant property on that corner, right? On this side of the Parikrama path. And you may have noticed there's one small building just over the wall. It's, I think, the only building on the property. Are you with me? Some of you may not have tuned in so much to the local scene, but anyway, if you're not really aware of what I'm talking about, next time you go out that way, just have a look. The last property on that side, before you come to the Parikrama path, and just over the wall, there's a small building about the size of this room, smaller than this room even. Small building. Now, that building used to be a church. Fortunately or unfortunately, whatever, someone knocked the cross off the top. But for many years there was a cross on it also, and a sign, although I never ever saw it used. Now, that church was established by an ex-sannyas disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, believe it or not, who went to preach to the Christians. But when he went to preach to the Christians, then, because there's a risk when you're preaching to people who are, you know, not so interested or holding some other idea, who are going to oppose your ideas, there's some risk. There's definitely some risk. So, to go back again to this idea of not getting your feet wet when trying to catch big fish, we're not encouraging you to go fishing either, but in the context of preaching, we have to be careful. There's the phenomenon, sometimes it happens, it wouldn't happen here so much, but in the Western world it happens sometimes, that some boy, relatively new boy, who's getting some feeling for preaching and wants to preach a bit, the devotees notice he's getting into the habit of preaching to the ladies that come, and not so much the men. And when he goes out on book distribution, it's like one woman after another, and not so much men. So the devotees then think, now wait a minute, this is not quite right, which is true. Of course, on the other hand, actually we should preach to everyone, and particularly when you're going out on Sankirtan doing books, basically we should try and distribute books in a very liberal mood, but we should also be aware of our own limitations and our own weaknesses. And so if we end up in some situation in which our own weaknesses are going to be played on, then we should be aware that, wait a minute, I've got to just take it easy here. So, preaching to the opposite sex is a very good example. Even preaching to those who are like, they strongly hold some opposing philosophy. This is also risky business. There are two risks. One is that if you're a Kanishta, that means you haven't got much knowledge and you haven't got much faith. So if you're preaching to such a person who is, you know, like pushing another philosophy at you, then you may not have the knowledge to deal with certain points he may present. Plus, you may not have the faith in that he, if he's particularly like, obviously, a Christian or a Muslim or people like this, he may have certain concepts about Krishna consciousness. And if you hear those, because you're not very knowledgeable and you don't have much faith, if he tells you that I know about Krishna consciousness, that, you know, this happens and that happens, then you may think, wow, really? Does that happen? And in this way, your faith, your weak faith, may be cut out. And you may, the problem is, for Kanishtas, the problem is that if they meet strong opposition, they may end up accepting the position of the opposition. This is a real danger for Kanishtas when they're preaching. So, anyway, the thing is that still we should try, but if we see that someone is opposed, they're not interested, and we try and make them interested, but we don't make them interested, they remain uninterested, then if you can, you should try and engage them. If you can, get them to chant Hare Krishna. If you have some prasad, get them to take prasad. I was with one devotee years ago, probably 1974 or something like that, in Wales, Great Britain. And we were going shop to shop, distributing books. So we went to one shop. The man was a Christian. He was just not interested. So we asked him for a donation. He was just not interested in taking part at all. So that we had some prasad, some sweets of some sort. So the one devotee I was with said, you know, my wife made these, and these are samples, and would you mind trying one? And so he said, oh, okay then. Of course it was prasad. So he took it. And he said, oh, very nice. So, in that way, he got engaged. So, of course, some people you can't engage them anyway, even if you try, and that's just too bad. But it's nice to try to engage people, if you can. And you may not be able to engage them by preaching to them, but you could maybe ask them to give a donation. Or if you have some prasad, get them to take some prasad. But you... this idea of not getting your feet wet when you're fishing. You have to use your own brains. Prabhupada would say that you have to fly your own aeroplane. You can't always depend on having, you know, your spiritual master, or even the temple president, or even the Sankirtan leader, or even just another devotee often. You can't count on having some other person with you who's going to be able to say that, no, wait a minute, no, you should leave this person. So, as Prabhupada said, you have to learn how to fly your own aeroplane. So we have to develop some discretion, at least, so as to see when a person is just not worth continuing with, and then get away. It may be one of those Christian people who won't want you to go away. You may see that there's no point in preaching, but they may feel that, no, we want to have it out. So then you have to be a little intelligent and say, well, actually, you know, it's 23 minutes to 11, and at 22 minutes to 11, I have an appointment on the other side of town. I have to get there immediately, and in that way, try and get away from them. So some discretion is needed. But otherwise, generally, we'll try. But we'll be very sensitive. We'll be very sensitive to these, like, different situations which may be dangerous for us. Which, for that matter, brings up the subject of giving up the association of non-devotees, which is one which none of you mentioned. Oh, one of you mentioned. I guess you're all quite convinced about that, but I thought we should just mention it a little. It's the first one of the second group. So in other words, it appears in chapter 7. And it appears, where is it? 64? Page 64. Giving up the company of non-devotees. Now, I'm not going to go into it in great detail, but there's just one particular theme I want to note. You'll see that Rupa Goswami is referring to a conversation which appears in Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is Lord Chaitanya speaking to the inhabitants of Kulina Gram, am I right? Kulina Gram? I think there were three conversations, actually, at three different occasions, every year for 3 years. How do you recognize a devotee? Who's a devotee? How can you tell? So, one answer that Lord Chaitanya gave was that you can tell a devotee because a devotee is a person who gives up the association of non-devotees. Then Lord Chaitanya explained that there are two types of non-devotees. And this is quite interesting and practical for us. So one class is against the supremacy of Krishna. So they're just non-devotees out and out. They're anti-Krishna. And the other class is too materialistic. So too materialistic, the implication is that they may well not be against the supremacy of Krishna. You follow the idea? They may well not be against. In other words, ostensibly, outwardly, they may appear to be devotees. This is the idea of the Kali Chela. Someone was telling me that they got frightened when they heard this idea of Kali Chela, because they were wondering, is it me? Which is, you know, a fair thing to, something we should be concerned about. So this is a very good idea as far as Kali Chela is concerned. Or as Prabhupada mentioned, if you remember, oh, it was in Bhagavad Gita, we were talking about it, chapter 9, verse 12. That there are some people, or some devotees, or some people who look like devotees, but actually they're not really devotees, because they're contaminated. But outwardly you look at them and you think, oh, it must be a devotee. Tilak, shaved head, and the various externals may be there. So this is the type of person who's being referred to here. Now, particularly if you happen to be a Kanishtha, now if you're a Madhyam, it's not going to be so much of a danger to you, because you have the knowledge, you should be able to recognize before too long, if you're having some interaction with the person. It shouldn't take you long to realize, wait a minute, this person is not right. This person is not really, you know, a good devotee, not someone who I want to associate with. Like this, and even if the person is throwing out some other ideas, wrong ideas, before you understand where they're at, because of the strong faith, not totally strong, but very strong faith of the Madhyamadhikari wouldn't really be affected. But the Kanishtha, The Kanishtha is like the real, the person who's in danger in this type of situation. Like the person who is apparently a devotee but is too materialistic in the sense that they may say, well, you know, these four regulative principles, it's all very well for those, you know, like the PDs. Have you heard this term before? The PDs. Oh, PD, pure devotee. So some people who are in this class, too materialistic, they think, these two materialistic people, they think that these strict devotees have a problem which they call the PD syndrome, the pure devotee syndrome. Do you get the idea? You know, they're sort of trying to put themselves up on some sort of pedestal. This in the estimation of the person who's too materialistic. So, you know, these four regulative principles, it may be all right for that sort of person. But we know that when you're a conditioned soul, it's very difficult, and we don't want to get too disturbed and agitated. So we try to follow the regulative principles, but sometimes, you know, depends. Sometimes we don't want to put ourselves into anxiety. Yes, rules were made to be broken after all. And if you're a Kanishtha, which automatically means you're going to be experiencing a fair amount of Maya, then you may think, yeah, this is a pretty good point. Yeah, maybe I can just bend a rule every now and then I won't feel so much anxiety sometimes. I can relieve myself. Or they say, you know, this chanting 16 rounds. Well, the thing is that you should really chant with quality. So you don't want to chant 16 bad rounds, do you? What's the point of that? Better to chant some number of rounds which you can do more comfortably and with better concentration, rather than just feel, oh, I'm under pressure to do 16, somehow I've got to get them done. What do you think, Svetadweep? Is that a good idea? Oh, no. You're right. This is the type of idea which comes from this person. And if you're a Kanishtha, then you may say, yeah, right. I know when I'm trying to finish my 16 rounds, some nights and I'm falling asleep and I can hardly hear myself and I'm slurring and dropping the beat sometimes. This man's got a point. Krishna Das?
Say one good round is better than
16
bad rounds.
Hare Krishna. Actually, one mantra, one name chanted with complete purity is better than a lifetime of offensive chanting, actually. But when are we going to chant that one name or mantra or round? When are we going to do it? Only after many, many years of practice and practice and pulling the mind back when it goes off and so on. Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate your point. I think we mentioned it yesterday, didn't we? Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, these are some of the ideas. That, you know, why get up for Mangal Aarti every morning? I mean, it makes you feel tired. Better to take enough rest. Then you can do your devotional service very nicely. Isn't that better? So such a person may not be against the supremacy of Krishna, but they're too materialistic. And particularly if you're a Kanishtha and you get into their association, then the risk factor goes right up and it may just go right out and you may get bewildered. So, yeah.
And some of these devotees have tendencies towards, well, karma and gyan. They may be into speculating philosophically, generally they are, in order to rationalize their watered-down version of Krishna consciousness. And they're certainly attached to karma in the broad sense, meaning just sense gratification generally. So the kanishta, like any conditioned soul, the kanishta is going to have contaminations of karma and gyan. So when they come into contact with people who appear to be authorized, but actually they're encouraging karma and gyan, the kanishta is in great danger of going down. So now let's just go on to this one which most of you were interested in, and that was the great danger of reading too many books, particularly Bhagavad Gita and Nectar of Devotion and Srimad Bhagavatam, books like that. Yeah? Okay.
Some of us come from family who are non-devotees, so in that context we do have problems at home.
Yes.
We do not want to be too rebellious at home, and at the same time, we do not want to give up.
Yes. Well, you have to learn the art of sidestepping. And you have to try and make them devotees also. Of course, I mean, after a while, it may become fairly clear, you know, if you're going to be able to make them devotees or not. It may become a little clear. So, anyway, if you can't, thing is this, if you can't make them devotees, then why are you going to associate much with them anyway? There's no real point in hanging out with them just to talk about Auntie this one and Uncle that one and how's your health and things like that. So of course, you know, generally speaking, we accept that even if your family are not devotees, unless they're not antagonistic, then we should, you know, have some ongoing relationship. But if they're not devotees, you know, you keep it to a minimum. In and out every now and then, and, you know, hello, how are you, and something like that. But don't get involved, because, I mean, it's just too much, actually. It's very unpleasant. So then, you know, when you see that the value of your visit, because there's a saying, isn't there? Oops. Hey Krishna, he's come to hear the class. Oh no, wrong room. So, there's a saying, isn't there? That on the first day, the guest is treated like a king. On the second day, what is it? I forget exactly. But the third day, he becomes like an unwanted uncle. You know, there's a saying. Prabhupada referred to it. So even your family, even though to see you, you know, every now and then, it's a little exciting for them. But after a little while, they get used to it. And then eventually they get tired of it. And like that, when you see that they're not feeding you, this is how they get rid of the unwanted uncle. They don't feed him. So then he goes somewhere else. Okay, let's just go on to this one about reading too many books. Now, it's on page 65, and it looks like three of them have been put together because they're related. Yeah. Of the second 10, numbers 2, 3, and 4 have been put together because the principle is related. The principle to be wary of is the principle of accumulating things which, from the material point of view, may look useful, but actually spiritually are not useful. So unfit disciples are certainly not useful. Or if, you know, in our own sense, we might not think of unfit disciples, but we don't want to just fill our temples up with useless people just for the sake of saying that the temple's full or, you know, that we have X number of devotees. You know, there was back in the late 70s, when there was a very competitive mood about book distribution particularly, then the devotees doing the bhakta programs in different parts of the world, they also got very competitive. So they started a monthly newsletter, the bhakta program newsletter, I guess it was called, and in it there was a competition every month. How many new devotees? And there were different levels. The first level, I think the first level may have been a guest. The second level, anyway, or maybe it was the first level, was called a seeker. In other words, you shave the person up. And then I guess the next level is someone who stays for 3 months. Or in this way, there are different levels. So I know in London that the devotees there, they were so into this mood of competition that they would just shave someone up, just. And when it got to the point that they went out and found some hobos in the street and shaved them up, then we realized, no, this has gone too far. So we don't want unfit people. You know, actually, until a person is shown that they really want to stay in the temple, and until we can see that actually at least they have a reasonably good chance, they appear to have a reasonably good chance if they're going to live in a temple, then we don't want to just drag people in. And in fact, I remember in Bhaktivedanta Manor once, I was taking a shower and two new bhaktas who had very recently shaved up were just outside the shower cubicles in the bathroom, just doing whatever. And they were speaking to each other. They said, "Wow, they're really fast around here, aren't they?" The other one said, "Yeah, before I knew it, they shaved my hair off." So, you know, on a certain level, it's a little encouraging. We used to have one person a day join. Every day, one person joined. But where are they all today? I don't know. So anyway, we don't want people like that. They're a liability. They're certainly a liability to the spiritual master if they're unfit disciples. And you may know that in Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, Bob Cohen, is that his name? He's discussing with Prabhupada that about how we suffer because of our karma. And then Prabhupada explains that, yes, that's true, but a pure devotee does not suffer because of his karma. He's transcendental to it. So Bob Cohen asks Prabhupada innocently that, "Oh, do you suffer?" And Prabhupada says, "Oh yes, I suffer." He's not trying to be clever, but Bob Cohen, but just asking. And then Bob Cohen says, but you are the best devotee. And surely, according to what you've said, surely you couldn't be suffering your karma. So Prabhupada says, "Yes, that's right. It's not my karma." And so anyway, there's some discussion, and I actually took out part of the discussion here. Did I? Or maybe I didn't. Anyway, the point is that Prabhupada says that he expresses in the terms that people suffer karma because of their sinful activities. So Prabhupada says, "So what is my sinful activity? My sinful activity is that I accepted some nonsense disciples. That is my sinful activity. So therefore I suffer sometimes." And Prabhupada makes the point that we should be very much cautious that for my sinful actions, my spiritual master will suffer. So I'll not commit even a pinch of sinful activities. This should be like one of the resolutions in the mind of the devotee. If the spiritual master is attacked by some disease, it is due to the sinful activities of others. Therefore, Jiva Goswami says, don't make many disciples. But we do it because we're preaching. Never mind, let us suffer. Still we shall accept them. Anyway, so that's a few points in that regard. As far as books is concerned, so Prabhupada made the point that certain books, even of his own books, certain books are more important than others. Who knows which are the four books which Prabhupada said are like the books? Yes, Nectar of Devotion. If you want a Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you'd have to buy Bon Maharaj's. I wouldn't recommend it. Yes, anyway, this is the idea. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion. And actually the fact is that even though Prabhupada wrote a number of other books, but Prabhupada did say on a number of occasions that strictly speaking, just these four are sufficient, really. And there's definitely no doubt that there's no need for anyone to at least read anything other than Prabhupada's books, unless they have some very special project they're doing, they have to do some research for. Or Prabhupada also said that if someone, a devotee, has become very conversant with his books, then the devotee may read other authorized Vaishnava literatures like the Goswami literatures and like that. Even Prabhupada said they should read, but only after the devotee has really become very conversant with Prabhupada's books. So what do you think of that idea? Is that okay? Does anyone disagree? So what I want to do, maybe the last thing we do today, I want to read a verse, let's see. I'll read a verse and purport from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam, actually, which is about this subject. You may know the verse. Bahu Shastre, Bahu Vakye, Chitte Brahma Hoya. You know what Brahma means? Confusion. Bahu Shastra, Bahu Vakya, many books, hearing many words from many different people. Chitte Brahma Hoya. Then your mind becomes confused. Sadhya Sadhana. This is not so clear. But anyway, the translation is, if one becomes a bookworm, reading many books and scriptures and hearing many commentaries and the instructions of many men, this will produce doubt within his heart. One cannot in this way ascertain the real goal of life. So I'll read the purport, Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada says in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.13.8, so then I also took out 7.13.8, I'll read that in a minute. So in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.13.8 it is said, one should not read many books, nor should one try to make a profession of reciting many books, especially if one's a devotee. So Prabhupada says, one must give up the ambition to be a learned scholar, and in this way earn a worldly reputation and financial facilities. If one diverts his attention to studying many books, he cannot fix his mind in devotional service, nor can he understand the many scriptures, for they are full of grave statements and meanings. In other words, he'll end up wondering, did I actually come from the Brahman, as I seem to have heard from some source, or did I come from Krishna, which I've heard from the ISKCON source? And gosh, I really don't know, and wow. In this way, one gets perplexed. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says in this connection that those who are attracted to studying many kinds of literature concerning various subject matters are deprived of unalloyed devotional service because of their splayed attention, What verse does this remind us of in Bhagavad Gita? Someone put your hand up first and tell us. Come on, someone's got to get it. Splayed attention. Why not? So they're deprived of unalloyed devotional service because of their splayed attention. So, Vikram. And the translation? Shivananda?
Oh, beloved son of cool lords, those who are determined in their endeavors
are... This is not exactly the right idea. You don't know the translation in English, I suppose. No, okay, so let's have Krishna Prasad then. Basically, that those who are on this path are resolute in determination and their aim is one. O beloved child of Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. So this is what happens. You get these different opinions, different perspectives, and it drains your enthusiasm, actually. In this way, you end up becoming ineffective in devotional service. You just can't get into it. So as far as 7.13.8 is concerned, let me just read that quickly. Translation. A sannyasi must not present allurements of material benefits in order to gather many disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. So I think I'll read the purport here. It's a very interesting purport. It covers all three of these subjects, the unfit disciples or unfit devotees, the idea of constructing temples unnecessarily, and reading too many books. So Prabhupada says, so-called swamis and yogis generally make disciples by alluring them with material benefits. There are many so-called gurus who attract disciples by promising to cure their diseases or increase their material opulence by manufacturing gold. These are lucrative allurements for unintelligent men. A sannyasi is prohibited from making disciples through such material allurements. Sannyasis sometimes indulge in material opulence by unnecessarily constructing many temples and monasteries, but actually such endeavors should be avoided. Temples and monasteries should be constructed for the preaching of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, and this is a very nice statement, not to provide free hotels for persons who are useful for neither material nor spiritual purposes. Have you ever seen people like that around our temples? I mean, occasionally you get them. They just can't make it materially, and they don't really want to make it spiritually, so they end up just sort of hanging somewhere. Temples and monasteries should be strictly off limits to worthless clubs of crazy men. In the Krishna consciousness movement, we welcome everyone who agrees at least to follow the movement's regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. In the temples and monasteries, gatherings of unnecessary, rejected, lazy fellows should be strictly disallowed. The temples and monasteries should be used exclusively by devotees who are serious about spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains some words from the verse to mean, or he explains these words which mean attempts to construct temples and monasteries, and he says, the first business of the sannyasi, actually it's meaning all of us really, is to preach Krishna consciousness. This is our first business. But if by the grace of Krishna facilities are available, then he may construct temples and monasteries to give shelter to the serious students of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, such temples and monasteries are not needed. Prabhupada, in the next purport in the Bhagavatam, says, The world is full of ordinary literature that creates unnecessary agitation in the mind. Such literature, including newspapers, dramas, novels, and magazines, is factually not meant for advancement in spiritual knowledge. Any of you like reading Time magazine? Newsweek? Anyone fond of Newsweek? Of course, I suppose you don't get exposed to these things much here, which is good. One thing Prabhupada said about those big periodicals, which are very much kind of politically oriented and economically oriented. Prabhupada said in every issue, they have the photos of the big politicians, President of America and, you know, Russia and European countries and Japan and China. They're always decorating the pages of these, like Time and Newsweek and India Today. How about India Today? Someone is fond of that? Anyway, they're always there. Arjun Singh. Does he still make it into the India Today? Or? I don't know either. Anyway, Prabhupada said, these people are so sinful. In order to become the big men they are, they can only do it by all sorts of corrupt means. No honest man will be able to get such a position. So only these very sinful, nasty men, they make it into those positions. And therefore their photos decorate these magazines. But Prabhupada said, if just by looking at their faces, just by looking at the pictures, oh, here's President such and such from somewhere. Just by looking at his face, you lose all your pious credits. So, we certainly don't need to bother with that sort of thing. Okay. Any comments or questions? Surab City?
Kind of a story to illustrate what you were telling me about unwanted people in the temple. A few years ago at Bhakti Nandamana, two persons came to join the Bhakti program. They were in their 20s, 30s. And they shaved up and they stayed for a little while there. Their behavior was kind of a little bit unusual. I mean, and one day a devotee who was watching the news saw, I don't know how to call that, the police
program.
An announcement, something like that, showing two pictures of two famous gangsters they were looking for, everyone, anyone. And that devotee had to. The opportunity to just fail in habits of looking at the news, Krishna's service.
Right.
Came back to the temple, brushing, checking the face of the people, and said, oh, these they are. And he called the police, and the police was really glad to catch those two people who was in the Bhakta program.
Now, are you trying to argue that we should watch the news on TV? Anyway, okay, fair enough. Interesting story. Yeah, I heard about that. Well, as they say, you can take gold from a dirty place. Doesn't mean we should inhabit dirty places looking for gold. Better to look in the gold mines. Any other comments or questions? Okay, we'll meet again tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.